Welcome back to another episode of LifeSite AI, the podcast series. And as we go full steam ahead with series five, we are joined by another digital therapeutics company and someone who has been in the industry for a long time and is probably want to describe as a definite thought leader. I would say, and before we were just chatting about his next appearance on the DTX series of conferences, and can't really do him justice on a short introduction. So please welcome to the podcast the CEO of BrainPlus, which is Kim Baden Christensen. Welcome very much to the podcast.
Good to be here, Nick, and everyone.
Awesome. So I would just, for everyone who doesn't know, BrainPlus is a pioneering company around DTX, which is developing a medical software to detect and treat cognitive systems, such as dementia, and then also the common causes of dementia. So really interesting space to be in, because there's lots of different ways of looking at degenerative diseases, and lots of different ways of either diagnosing or treating those diseases with technology. And BrainPlus have their own way of looking at that that clinical pathway, and we'll delve into that in a lot of detail. But as I said, you're a lot more than the CEO of BrainPlus as well. It'd be great for give a really full in-depth introduction. I tried to write one, but I kept rewriting it. I know how to do it.
That's fair. What do you want, introduction of BrainPlus or myself or both?
Let's go both. Let's go yourself first, and then a little bit into BrainPlus.
Sure. My original background is in business. I have a master's degree in management of technology. It was called at a Copenhagen Business School. Then I've studied cognitive psychology after starting BrainPlus at the University of Copenhagen, and had a healthcare innovation degree from Harvard Business School. So that's just the official background. Then in terms of making my way into DTX, really started with a more classic corporate career. I was in the Boston Consulting Group as a management consulting for a number of years. Then I jumped to one of my clients, which at that time was Vestas Wind Energy Systems, the biggest wind energy company in the world with 20,000 employees, where I was vice president of marketing and customer insights. And from there, I was looking for the right idea, which I had been knowing for ever since I started business school, and probably even before. I have a grandfather who's an entrepreneur, that I wanted to try and venture out on something myself. And I knew that I wanted to do something that helped a lot of people, that used technology to do so, and also something that had to do with human development. I'm very fascinated by how we develop as human beings, you know, what's happening, how are we growing, how are we evolving, how are we learning. So I was searching for a while for that, reading about both cognitive psychology and neuroscience, and that's when, around maybe 12 and a half or 13 years ago, I discovered neuroplasticity, that entire concept, which is now well known in the broad public, but wasn't at that time. And it was really mind-blowing to me what the brain was capable of in terms of restructuring throughout life, basic, also after a serious injury has been incurred, or even from brain disorders. And I read a book called The Brain That Changed Itself, and it described also how some of the pioneers were using computer games to train children with autism into hearing, being able to distinguish sounds better, and thus being able to map sounds more correctly in the brain, and thus being able to communicate better, giving them higher quality of life. And having been an avid computer gamer in my youth, I could really see the potential there. And that was the start of the journey for BrainPlus, which started with a focus on improvement of cognition using computer-based exercises. And that's essentially also still the core of what we do. Cognition is really our focus. So improvement in cognitive functions, such as memory and attention.
Yeah.
We've broadened a little bit in the sense that we have included a behavioral therapy like cognitive stimulation therapy, which gives these cognitive improvements in people with mild to moderate dementia. The only difference you can say is that the therapy in itself is not just computer-based exercises. It's also more social interactions, but it's all delivered via the digital software in terms of guiding content, structure, etc. And there are even now we're developing versions, the second product version, which is for home use, which will also include the computer-based exercises.
Mm, okay. And then so it sounds like you've had that really entrepreneurial background. And so you mentioned your grandfather there as well. And it seems like an inquisitive mind looking to take something to improve humans in terms of their social interaction, but also their healthcare as well. And it landed on a couple of areas following some, I wouldn't say like big life events, but small life events that created big change for you of reading those books and looking at different areas for it. So quite a simple question for you. What's your purpose?
So my purpose with the company is to create impact, basically, and to create something where a lot of people are being helped. That's the primary purpose. And dementia happened to be the area where we could see, and I'm saying we because I'm thinking not only myself, but the team behind me, or with me rather, where we could see we could be making the greatest impact with both the knowledge that we've developed over the years, the technologies we've been developing over the years, and just like the fact that nobody else were really doing anything significant in that space, at least when we were entering. I think there are other companies doing some nice things as well now, not directly competing, more complementary with what we're doing.
Yeah,
so that I think is only positive. But I think that's really the purpose is impact.
Yeah,
for me personally, it goes a little bit hand in hand with a personal purpose of mine.
Yeah.
Which is to basically improve general awareness and consciousness in people. And I think working with cognition is a brilliant way of doing that. It goes very well hand in hand with the mission of the company.
Yeah. And when you were, you know, in your consulting days and such, were you thinking of always going into healthcare? Was that the aim, or is that a circumstance of the impact you wanted to create, kind of had to be in sort of this healthcare psychology cognitive function environment that you're in now?
Yeah, it's more the latter. It's more a function of where we believe we could make the largest impact. Given what we were creating and had created, and what we could see in terms of the need and how the world works, so to speak, that's how we ended up in healthcare.
Cool. And just before we delve into, I guess the pieces around Brain Plus and DTX as a whole, but where you sort of sit in a clinical need, it'd be good to give the listeners and some viewers on YouTube as well, I'm sure, for an understanding of the Brain Plus as of today, because you mentioned when you created the company what the original piece was, you know, a number of years ago, right? So it'd be good to understand what the state of the business is today, where you guys look at number of people and sort of the gravitas that you have as well in the market within DTX before we look at the clinical area of dementia.
Sure. I mean, you can say we have a number of specializations at this point, which are building on top of our original specialization, which was just computer-based interventions for cognitive improvements, right? That's still a base, a red thread in what we're doing. Since then, we have really specialized on the one hand in Alzheimer's and dementia. And so we have like clinicians on staff. Our clinical director has a background in this area, for example. A huge partner collaborator network in this area is with some of the leading KOLs, both within dementia, but also within cognitive stimulation therapy, which is the primary therapy that we're working with. The other area of specialization is digital therapeutics, basically, right? So becoming a software as a medical device company that can basically go in and work with all the regulations and look at the reimbursement and think more out of the life science angle, not only the software angle, right? So So that has been a transformation that has also been occurring, and we're fully there in terms of the transformation. You can say we are really an Alzheimer's dementia DTX team at this point in time, both in terms of the actual team, also in terms of our board of directors, where we have some of the like leading KOLs on Alzheimer's disease in our board of directors as well. So that's really where we are in terms of specialization, you could say. In terms of people, we're around 18 people. Most of them are in Copenhagen, but we are actually kind of a remote hybrid type work setup. So we have employees in Germany, in Turkey. We have employees around Denmark that are not directly in Copenhagen, where the rest of us are. And just generally more and more how we're operating as a company as well. In terms of maturity, there you can measure that on a number of parameters. Of course, we have the first product in the market for dementia, which is a tool that supports therapists in delivering cognitive stimulation therapy. And we can get back to that therapy, what that is, and what is behind that. And so we're just starting that commercialization journey in Denmark. We'll be launching in the UK as well, and also operating in Germany, also in the looking towards the US, but right now getting ready for UK entry is one of the primary priorities that we have. UK is the country where this therapy originated from, and that's also one of the reasons we're focusing on the UK, apart from a number of other reasons, of course. We are a publicly listed company here on the so-called microcap exchange, NASDAQ First North, here in Copenhagen.
Yeah.
That has also been a journey of maturation, you can say, in a number of areas, such as governance, administration, and quality around all of that stuff, of course. Yeah.
I think you must therefore be, I'm trying to rack my brain very quickly here now. You could be the first publicly listed company on the podcast out of the almost 25, 30 episodes that we've done now across the last 3 years. Sure. Might be corrected on that on LinkedIn afterwards. Sure. But looking at where dementia is as a clinical need, it seems like there has been a logical step in your journey each time there's been a forward movement, not just in the Brain Plus journey, but in, I guess, your own personal journey as well. Because I'm not sensing that you sort of came out of university and go, right, I'm going to build a company that's going to be an app-based digital device that can support people with dementia. It's almost been like a sort of journey to get where we are, right? So where you are, but for those who sort of don't know what the dementia clinical need is, give an insight to the size of the clinical need and also the unmet problems that are there within it, and how the traditional way of healthcare access and also healthcare delivery means that there is a not the quality really that we would want to hope to deliver to patients with these degenerative diseases.
Sure. So I mean, dementia is without a doubt one of the largest unmet clinical needs in the world today. In terms of numbers and prevalence, it's about 55 million people who have dementia today. That number is going to triple over the next couple of decades. So it's really growing fast, particularly with the aging of the population.
Is it down to the tripling? Is that down to aging populations, or is that down to different lifestyles that we lead now compared to the 50, 100 years ago?
So it's a mix of things. So age is one of the absolutely most predictive risk factors that you have. You also have genetic risk factors, and then you have lifestyle risk factors, and a number of those are well known. So then you will see how different countries have different trajectories in terms of lifestyles, right? Mm-hmm. Some countries are actually improving on average in lifestyles, which is bringing down the prevalence if you just look within a particular age bracket,
right?
But due to the overall aging of the population, the number of people in that country will still be increasing.
Yeah.
Then you have countries where the lifestyle behaviors are going in the wrong direction, and then it's just like adding on top of the aging trajectory as well, right? So that's basically it's a mix of those things, but aging is a primary driver, you can say. Lifestyle risk factors include things such as, you know, classics, smoking, overweight, cardiovascular problems, other diseases such as comorbidities, diabetes, depression, brain injury. These are well-known risk factors. MS, Parkinson's, result in increased likelihood of getting dementia later on.
Mm.
So there are a number of different factors that are driving it, and yeah. you can do something about reducing your risk as an individual. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So I'm interrupted as you were sort of setting the scene. The dementia care, so you're saying it's the biggest, and it was, you know, it's going to triple for it. So what's sort of like the healthcare landscape previously, and where you guys fit in to it, and how can technology therefore fit into delivering better care for these patients?
Sure. That brings us a bit to the unmet clinical need, right? I mean, just very briefly on the cost basis, you know, it's cost about $1,000 billion US dollars annually, which is more than diabetes costs. Actually, it's about a couple of $100 billion US dollars more than the cost of diabetes on a global scale. And that number will be doubled already by 2030. So it's really an expensive disease, because people it's basically defined like one of the criteria is that you lose the ability to take care of yourself. Mm. Hence, it becomes very expensive because each person needs to be then taken care of, right?
Yeah.
So that's the problem. The other problem is that it has really been difficult and tricky for the traditional way of treating diseases to find solutions for this. So there's been a very long period of failures in terms of drug trials for Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. There were a few drugs that were approved many years ago.
Yeah.
But that don't really modify the disease. They don't really change the trajectory of the disease. There's been some recent breakthroughs, which is great. We actually had this summer an FDA approval for Leqembi / lecanemab, which is cited to be the first disease-modifying Alzheimer's drug to be FDA approved, which removes some protein tangles in the brain and thus also shows reductions in cognitive decline for those who are on it. And again, this is great news. This is still a very, very expensive way of treating the disease, still comes with a number of side effects, but nevertheless, great news, you know. So, but it will be a very, very long time before this will be accessible to the people in need of it. And it will not be affordable to all the people in need of it. So if you look at dementia today, out of all the people diagnosed, less than half of them get offered anything in terms of, and now I'm not only talking treatment, I'm talking even support programs.
Like, yeah? Flip that. Imagine, like, take the UK, right? If we had a BBC News bulletin saying 50% of people with cancer will not be offered any treatment.
That's basically what we're looking at in dementia on a global scale.
Yeah.
Ones that are, a lot of them that are actually then being offered something is kind of like activities and support groups.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. That's great. The more of that, the better. But what we also need is evidence-based therapies, right?
Mm.
And so while the drugs then play an important role there, and hopefully we'll see more breakthroughs coming from this particular line of mechanisms of action. So that's positive. We also need other solutions. And this is where the kind of behavioral therapies can come in. And their cognitive stimulation therapy has now amassed a great deal of evidence that it improves cognition. That's consistent And therefore, it's now been recommended for global implementation by the World Alzheimer's Association.
Where did CST sort of, what's the journey of cognitive stimulation therapy?
So the journey is that it was invented at University College of London by a professor called Amy Spector. And she like, and this is way back more, I think more than 20 years back actually. And like many therapies, they, it starts really small and it takes a long time for them to amass enough evidence for them to actually gain real recognition and traction. And then I think a first decade went by with studies being done and positive results coming out. Yeah. Then the first meta review came out, I think in 2012, the first Cochrane review, which is kind of like a gold standard for evaluating therapies like this.
Yeah.
And, since then, another decade has passed. And then actually early this year, the second Cochrane review came out, really just confirming that this is still, you know, a solid therapy, which is delivering improvements in cognition, quality of life, and communication.
Yeah.
And it's of course based due to this evidence base that you see, a policy recommendation like the one you see in the World Alzheimer's report from last year. And once you start having these policy recommendations, that's when things start going more quickly. Around the world, you have around 37 countries that are in the processes of adopting CST. Some of them much further than others. Like Denmark and the UK being among some of the leading ones. The US is a fast follower there as well.
Yeah.
Hopefully now it will really accelerate with this policy recommendation.
Yeah, and it's like as soon as you get, like you said, like the accreditations, the clinical studies behind it, the evidence through it, there's almost like a snowball effect, really, isn't there? What's like the original CST, and then what's like the DTX version with the technology implemented within it? Like, how does that differ to the original?
Yeah.
I guess that's the exciting bit everyone's probably listening and hoping to learn from today.
Yeah, absolutely. So the way CST is being done today is that people meet in the clinic, 3 to 7 people with a trained therapist or two present, to basically guide them through 45 minutes to an hour worth of activities that are using a wide number of modalities, basically. So it's, first of all, it's socially engaging and stimulating. Then it includes things like you're reflecting, you're thinking, you're processing mentally different questions, follow some principles that make sure that it's actually a very psychologically safe therapy, which is also conducive to people engaging and actually to their mental health if they're partaking in the therapy. And they're doing that for around 14 sessions. So classically over 7 weeks to twice a week. That's a classic kind of CST basic program. And this is what yields consistent improvements. Then it's also recommended to continue that with a maintenance, just maintaining it basically. And there, the way it's being done today is usually it's like once a week, people are maintaining it. But the clinical evidence is showing that actually a dose of twice a week gives much better results. And hence, one of the big challenges today in the healthcare systems is that it takes time not only to prepare, but of course also to do the actual sessions themselves, right?
Yeah.
So that's where the DTX solutions come in relation to cognitive stimulation therapy. The first product we're doing is actually a tool for the therapist that is delivering highly curated content for them.
Right.
And this content is also something that can be tailored to the individual group. If you look at the span from mild to moderate dementia, the cognitive ability can vary like quite widely in that span. And you also can have big age differences, and people relate differently depending on their age.
Yeah.
So the importance of having customizable content that, you know, by making some particular settings, you can immediately have a tailored program for one of the groups is something that is tremendously time-saving and valuable to the therapist. So that's the first product. We call it the therapist companion product. So that's what that does. It helps therapists deliver. Yeah.
But a hard thing, right, to have, like when you say dementia care, like you said, it's such a wide-ranging piece. Like, it's almost like if someone, I go back to it again with the example, just because of the different nuances between it. It's like saying, okay, you're going to have cancer care, but there's probably as many nuances within cancer care of the different cancers that there are within dementia because of the different, you know, ages or social situations, mental health care maybe attached to it needed, the different, where they are on the decline sort of trajectory as well. And yeah, so many. So that I can see is going to be a, you know, big help for just like the efficiency of the therapists.
Exactly. Exactly. So and just, yeah, both time saving and quality of delivery and how it fits actually to the particular patients that you have in front of you.
Yeah.
So that's the one product. The other product is one that enables this therapy to be delivered at home. So rather than doing it in the clinic, it can be done in one-to-one sessions with a family caregiver at home. And this is where accessibility becomes so much larger, and where cost efficiency and delivery becomes so much larger as well. Because all of a sudden you can deliver and maintain this therapy at a much lower cost than what is possible for the healthcare systems today. That form will be slightly different, and this will also include more of the interactive exercises that we were talking about earlier for the home version. And that's really like a big innovation in how to deliver CST, and the KOLs are very excited about that as well, about the potential for that, because it can really help accelerate adoption of basically the best proven non-pharmacological dementia therapy today. And that's what our aim is with these products.
I think that's totally wicked in terms of like both the clinical access to the treatments. Like I said, that's gonna increase the 50% offering hugely to it, because of the cost effectiveness is so low comparative to what's available now with it. And we've not even touched on the probably the lack of therapists to deliver the current CST model, right? Mm-hmm. More than anything. So to scratch the surface then on that second product, how much can you or willing around the technological underpinning of that product, can you sort of share with us of how you are either achieving or looking to achieve that sort of, I guess, revolution in how CST is delivered to individuals?
Yeah. So I think as with many other DTX solutions that are behavioral in nature, the engagement levels are key, right? So that's of course a mix of a good user experience, a good UI. But in the case of CST, which is highly activity based, it's also a matter of getting the right activities and doing them in the right way. In the home setting, where it was going to be a one-to-one setting, usually between a person with dementia and a family caregiver, which could be the spouse, it could be also be one of the children, for example.
Yeah.
It's really important to take into account that usually the caregivers, they already have quite a big burden on their hands. Mm-hmm. Usually stressed, mentally burdened by taking care of a person with dementia. So it's critical here that we minimize the burden to them, and it actually becomes something that benefits them as well, because they will be engaged. And so what we're working on here is engaging them as participants that are benefiting and enjoying. And I do say enjoying, because that's one of the key things that people who participate in CST benefit from, is that they're actually enjoying themselves. It's a really enjoyable time that they're having when they're engaging in this. And the improvement of communication is also an important aspect here. And you can see, like, on a more on an anecdotal scale, we're basically seeing how couples have basically come back and say, you know, we've learned new things about each other that we, even though we've been married for decades.
Yeah.
after engaging in this type of activity. And so that is really key as well, is how do we engage a family caregiver in a way that works. So that's another aspect of it. That's really, really important. Then in general, this target population and how to develop content for them is a whole art and science in itself. It's not just downloading a number of images from an image bank and then saying, hey, what do you see here? It's really like, we probably don't want to go into too many details because it can take a long time.
Will you have like, I'm bespoke, so like when the person goes in, will they have to put in as much sort of detail around, you know, when they were diagnosed, what they can do now, maybe initial testing, their family situation, their age, their lifestyle, and then will the technology create that sort of bespoke program for them based on their data inputs?
Yeah, so that's how it will work. Often there will be a therapist supporting them.
Yeah.
Like many other DTX solutions have proven to be the most effective way to create long-term engagement is to have even very light touch therapist engagement, meaning that there'll be a therapist maybe following up on them bi-weekly, or if the data shows that there is a drop off in engagement, right? Because that can also be monitored, of course, but also basically setting the initial training program and inputting all the necessary parameters. So for the family caregiver, who will be the one generally just operating the system? It won't be the person with the dementia operating the system, right? It will be the family caregiver in this case. That all of that is basically already taken care of. So they just have to follow the very simple instructions, you can say, to actually go through with all the exercises.
Yeah, wicked. Okay. And in terms of, just so we're not, everyone's understanding, I guess, like the expectations of CST, where it fits in the dementia, is it something that sort of slows the decline of an individual? It's not a curable thing, right? It's not going to get you back to sort of full parity.
No, exactly. It's not a so-called disease modifying thing.
Yeah.
So the underlying disease will remain there, but it is something that can basically alter the trajectory and the current level of function. So the improvements in cognition that you see using CST corresponds to roughly half a year delay in cognitive decline for a person with dementia. And that, of course, is really significant, both in terms of self-sufficiency and quality of life, because that is, it's basically you're changing, you're lifting the trajectory. It's been, I mean, so far there's nothing that has changed. There's no treatment, at least that I'm aware of, including drugs, that are changing the end date.
The
end date remains the same, but instead of a trajectory going like this, you might have one going more like that.
Makes sense. So you're sort of as you were before for as long as possible, and then just before the end date there's a significant decline, but it means that you're as much your best self as for as long as possible with it. And just like the last question, we rattled through this podcast already pretty much, and this is very much a DTX focused question. If you could change one thing around DTX right now, what would it be and why?
If I could change one thing, probably it would be a wide and standardized reimbursement landscape for DTX.
How would that, because it was such a topic at the DTX Europe in London. So obviously there's Diga, we had a presentation by the French ministry as well, sort of explaining the beginning of their process and such. Do you think there's an opportunity for the USA to really take a lead on that? Because, you know, they're a big healthcare system, which is not decentralized, but it's not fully federal in terms of reimbursement as well. Like, do you think they could take a lead for which Europe can jump in as well, or?
They certainly have the possibility to do so. I think Europe is in a sense currently in a bit in the lead here.
Once in healthcare, Europe's in the lead.
But of course, I mean, you have particular individual health systems in the States, which in some aspects is centralized and federal, but in many aspects is actually really decentralized. Yeah. But then you have very large private health systems and health systems within the States that in themselves are like entering a small or a mid-sized or even a large country, right? So
So
the States, yes, they do have a real possibility. And I'm also mentioning it because like in a country like the States, it's all about really who's going to pay and how is the clinician even going to make money on this, right? Yeah. I mean, there's an even bigger focus on that in the States. It's also an important focus in Europe, obviously, to be able to just remove the adoption barrier in terms of payment, right?
Well, I think definitely a lot of things to think about during this episode. I think also just like the journey that you've been on, we've not even scratched the surface, as what I said. So lots of more things to follow. And I guess if people want to got questions and follow up on, you're pretty actively out there as just want to put like an influencer with this as much as you can be. So I'm sure you'd be happy to, for anyone who wants to follow up with anything to get into
always. Right?
But thank you very much for joining us today, Kim, and sharing your insights and explaining where Brain Plus sits within the dementia healthcare system and the advantages of CST and the technology behind it and what can really be done and what you're looking to achieve. And I'm sure all of us have indirect or direct impacts of dementia in their lives. And so it's going to touch a lot of people, and hopefully we'll see that impact and wide adoption very, very soon.
I'm working hard on it with the team. So let's get there. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Nick. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening, guys. Bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye.